This Spotlight edition of the Security Ledger podcast is sponsored by Spirent Communications. Spirent is the leading provider of verification, assessment, analytics, and device intelligence solutions. Spirent enables those who deliver networks, connected devices, and communication services to provide a superior user experience. From service provider networks and enterprise data centers to mobile communications and connected vehicles, Spirent works with leading innovators to help the world communicate and collaborate faster, better, and more securely. To learn more, point your web browser to spirent.com, that's S-P-I-R-E-N-T.com, or follow them on Twitter at Spirent. Hello and welcome to a Spotlight edition of the Security Ledger podcast, sponsored by Spirent Communications. I'm Paul Roberts, Editor-in-Chief at the Security Ledger. The U.S. House of Representatives and the Senate both introduced new legislation this week to secure the burgeoning Internet of Things. Versions of the Internet of Things Cybersecurity Improvement Act would require connected devices that are for purchase by the U.S. federal government to meet strict information security standards. The proposed legislation doesn't exactly set a federal standard for private sector firms. Instead, it uses the federal government's considerable purchasing power as a lever to force changes on the private sector. But there's a much more consequential standard that's already taking root. This one, backed by CTIA, the trade group that represents major telecommunications firms and internet providers. Introduced in August 2018, the CTIA Cybersecurity Certification Program for Cellular Connected Internet of Things devices is promoted as a way to protect consumers and the nation's wireless infrastructure from the harm that might be caused by insecure Internet of Things endpoints. But what does the standard entail, and how are products evaluated for it? To find out, we sat down with Samir Dixit, the Senior Director of Security Consulting at Spirent Communications. Spirent is one of just five CTIA-authorized test labs operating around the world. In this conversation, Samir and I talk about the new standard and what it asks of device makers. We also talk about the teeth in the new standard, as CTIA has made certification a prerequisite before any device can be connected to a cellular network in the U.S. To start off, I asked Samir to talk about the CTIA standard and where the push for IoT certification is coming from.
I'm Samir Dixit, VP Security Consulting for Spirent Communications. So if you look at it today, right, there are tons of devices that are in like sub-$100 range, which are getting shipped and are running on carrier networks. So we are seeing a lot of demand for IoT security by the service providers across the globe, either it's in APAC or US or UK. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of needed that there is something that gets done for IoT cybersecurity.
The standard is called what?
It's called IoT Cybersecurity Certification. We are a CATL, which is a CTIA authorized test lab. There are five test labs at the moment across the globe, and Spirent happens to be one of them. Because again, these are the five labs along with Spirent that actually contributed to come up with this test plan. The way we designed the test plan is, as you know, security is not a one size that fits all. First of all, there are three categories, level one, two, and three. Mm-hmm. Minimum required today by CTIA is level one. And again, depending on the device complexity, the type of information it stores, something that's like your child's toy does not really need the same level of security. That's something that's connected to a national grid in an industrial IoT, mm-hmm. or connected to like a bedside to a patient. It provides you a step into kind of raising the bar on the minimum security by design. So looking at some of the key factors like authentication schemes, password management, software updates, if there are tamper detections in place, if there are enterprise managements in place, which rotates the password, if there are over-the-air updates that happens on a device, how is that handled? Are there PKIs in place for, or are we using static keys? We are promoting a unique default password, right, for every device.
Right.
So that, like, it's not easily readily available on Google and someone searches it and then start attacking those devices. So it's done to kind of like raise the minimum bar for any device that's coming out. The other thing that CTI also did, which I really commend, is that they have been able to get us make this as a part of a PTCRB process. PTCRB process is if you have a device that emits any sort of a wireless range to run on a carrier network, you have to get your device certified. So now today, if you're building an IoT device with a cellular chip in it, then it's required that it goes through PTCRB certification, and as a part of PTCRB certification, it's also required that it goes through IoT cybersecurity certification too.
So how do you come up with the list of qualifications or requirements? Did you build on top of existing standards or best practices?
There were several existing standards that were actually referenced as when we were developing this. So NIST already had a framework. There are other test labs, including both security labs, UL, mm-hmm. and others, that also had their penetration testing methodology for IoT device. So we kind of like all pooled together and said, this is what we are going to do. And it needs to be done in a manner that the labs that are certifying for it can do it consistently. UL, for example, is utilizing their methodologies.
Yes.
Spirent is utilizing their methodology. There is no single standard. So that's why it was important to come up with a single standard that all the certified labs, SGS and others, which are part of this effort, can actually do it consistently.
Right. So you can't lab shop, so to speak.
Correct.
Right. Spirent works with companies all the time on these types of issues. How heavy a lift is this going to be for the companies out there making internet-connected machinery or even consumer electronics to meet these standards?
So the devices, if you look at the device manufacturers, if you are not like one of those like Google, Nest, and others, right, who have tremendous amount of money,
and
great security talent in-house, your biggest challenge is A, the spend, and then B, is it going to be a really cumbersome process for me to even embark upon? So what we did is we came up with a simple questionnaire that gets sent out to the device manufacturer. Device manufacturer fills in that questionnaire, send it to the authorized test lab. Test lab looks at, does this, first of all, device even meet all the criteria? Mm-hmm. So like, for example, if you're going for, say, like a level one, so there are list of things that device needs to do. It needs to have a password management. It needs to have authentication scheme in place. It used to be able to, should be able to do patch management and mm-hmm. software updates.
Mm-hmm.
If you meet all that, then at least you are qualified for at least level one.
Mm-hmm.
If you do not, then they have to make changes to the device to at least meet that criterion. Every level is built upon on top of each other. So
mm-hmm.
what's in level two encompasses
right.
level one
plus
and
one,
plus
right.
level yeah. two. The way it was designed was what type of data is associated with that device.
Right.
If that device is compromised, what could be the impact of that to an organization, to a nation, depending on where that device is installed.
Okay.
So it's based on the device functionality.
Can we talk about some of the kind of add-on features that are part of this certification? So, I mean, when you look, for example, at category one, you have patch management, software updates, access controls. Then category two, you start requiring things like multi-factor authentication.
Correct.
Right.
If the device does do multi-factor authentication, or if the device is actually indeed carrying sensitive information, we want the device to actually look at, is it being able to audit logs? So
mm-hmm.
if there is an attack on it,
right.
one should be able to audit the logs and see if the attack has happened. It should have the capability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It should have a capability to do multi-factor authentication by some sort of a token mechanism or any other method of dual factor authentication. It should be able to be remotely deactivated. It should be able to boot itself securely in a safe mode. Plus, device being able to identify itself uniquely, which is key.
You're listening to a Spotlight edition of the Security Ledger podcast sponsored by Spirent Communications. Spirent is the leading provider of verification, assessment, analytics, and device intelligence solutions. Spirent enables those who deliver networks, connected devices, and communication services to provide a superior user experience. From service provider networks and enterprise data centers to mobile communications and connected vehicles, Spirent works with leading innovators to help the world communicate and collaborate faster, better, and more securely. To learn more, point your web browser to spirent.com. That's SPIRENT.com, or follow them on Twitter @Spirent. You talked about this as kind of, it's really about moving left of pen testing and focusing on the development and design process. That can be hard to do. There are a lot of devices that are already out there, right? And there are companies that are used to doing things the way they do them. So how do you kind of push that best practices and secure design mentality down on companies where it might not exist?
So the thing is, right, so this sort of sets the minimum bar, and with the requirement that if you're going to run on a carrier network or if you're running on a Wi-Fi, these through the PTCRB process, you have to meet at least the basic level of security. So you're doing at least the basic things, password management, software updates, etc., to kind of raise the bar a little bit in terms of security. So the minimum barrier for entry for any device into the market in terms of security gets higher than what is today. As of February, there were no requirements in place for any device to be PTCRB certified, but today there is also a security component in the PTCRB process.
Is this North America only, or is this Europe as well, or rest of the world?
I don't think the compliance itself limits itself in terms of boundaries of the nations who wants to adopt it, but the most of the carrier participation is from United States. But I have customers who are selling into United States, but if you really look at it, the devices are being manufactured all across
the
globe,
right?
And they are being sold in every market. For a device to be sold in a U.S. market, they have to go through the certification.
Now, is there like a badge or something that products will get, kind of the UL lab?
Yeah, so that's being in discussion, to be honest. Like the device would be able to say, like, I'm level one CTIA certified. I would probably not go on a record on that one saying that yes, there is or not.
Because you could break the news here first on Security Ledger Podcast.
Well, as soon as we... as a working group decides that, I'll let you know.
How does the enforcement happen? So for devices that might be looking to connect to an AT&T or Verizon minus the certification, I mean, how are they to know?
So the process is, if a device is being deployed on any service provider network, to pass the PTCRB certification, they have to get from a carrier a certificate that, okay, we waive the right for this device to be certified, and then we would accept PTCRB certification without the device going through IoT.
Right.
That's in the beginning, but I don't think that's something that will stay like this for long.
Mm-hmm.
And the other proportion is that level one is minimum required to pass PTCRB.
And
if you can't get a waiver from a provider.
We were talking about this before, but I mean, obviously, one of the concerns that, you know, device makers have is, you know, cost of certification, you know, and that being a limiting factor to bringing your product to market. But you were saying that these are not going to be burdensome certification requirements.
Great question, right? I mean, when we were just really designing this, the first thought that was actually at top of our minds was this should apply to the masses. So if you really look at it, for level one sort of a certification, it's only $5, the certification fees. For with testing and everything involved, it's really not bank-breaking. So if you're looking at close to $10,000-ish to get a device certified for level one.
What's really interesting is, I mean, a lot of these requirements are going to require device makers to really think almost from the ground up, right? Like, to support some of these features, that's going to really affect choices they make about the hardware that they use, you know, or the components that they use to enable some of these features, particularly around strong identity and so on.
Correct.
So you're pushing security back down through the whole supply and development process.
True. So it's sort of a function which is actually, it's driving the behavior for thinking about security from the ground up rather than trying to bolt it on. You can bolt it on, right? I mean, if you are level one, you got certified for level one because you only had features in there that supports level one. Every time a device is updated, both on a software or a hardware side, then it goes through a recertification. So that's one. But if suppose you came up with your version one and you only had features for level one, version two, you could think about like adding more features so that you could be more secure. So it does give you stepping stones to kind of get the device to that maximum strength security, but you don't really have to start with the maximum strength security.
So will these apply to, let's say, smart home products that are deployed on a home Wi-Fi but not directly deployed on the carrier network?
Correct. Certification is for both Wi-Fi enabled and wireless enabled devices.
Okay, so it would apply to
Wi-Fi.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Wi-Fi devices don't really go through PTCRV process. But let's see, there's a lot of work that's happening in the background. Once I have more information, I'll give it to you.
Okay, to maybe introduce some kind of forcing function there.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I'm the journalist, so I'm going to ask the fear, uncertainty, and doubt question, which is, lots of devices are already deployed on carrier networks that don't meet these standards because they were designed prior to them. Is there going to be a drop-dead date where carriers are going to say, if you're not compliant with CTIA, you're off the network?
I wish I could say yes, but again, when we were designing this certification, this certification came after there are already devices that are running. So you can't really just pull all of them back and say, now you have to meet it. But I wouldn't be surprised if PTCRB or CTIA or even carriers actually go back and say, hey, all the devices that are running on the network as of today, you have 6-7 or month or a year to get on the wagon.
So at some point saying, we're going to support you for the time being, but at this date, certain, either you're compliant or you're off. What I love about this is what's always been lacking with IoT standards, which is, where are the teeth, right? What is going to, I mean, you know, when you look at UL, for example, that the idea there is like, well, it's a benefit to you for consumers. So it's going to drive sales because people are going to look for the UL label. But many of these other ones, they're purely voluntary. You know, there's no forcing function, as you called it, to make device makers, you know, adopt the standards. In this case, you've got one.
Yeah, and the forcing function was really not the basic intent of this certification. It was to really drive security by design.
Right.
And then I think the PTCRB process is definitely helping because, as you said, right, otherwise it's voluntarily. Do I really even spend an hour or 2 hours going through the process? Why, if it's not required? But for consumers, it's dreadful if their devices are being attacked, their homes are getting attacked because of a device that is placed on their network.
Really fascinating. Over time, do you think this makes the Internet of Things more secure? Do we see a lot of
the
problems go away?
It's a step in the
right
direction.
Yeah, the Mirai botnets and things. Do we see those start to disappear if we actually get a population of devices that have at least done this basic?
Security is a moving target, as we all know. So this is a step in that right direction to actually make Mirai type of attacks even more difficult for attackers to carry out. This also has an overarching effect on the industrial IoT side as well. So because CTIA certification was designed to adopt sort of any device that runs either on a carrier network or a Wi-Fi. So as PLCs and HMIs that are running out there, they could also adopt the same standards.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a lot about the need for some kind of standard, federal standard, FTC standard, what have you. Does this, in effect, become a North American standard or a U.S. standard for IoT security, not because it's an actual legal standard, but just because, you know, these organizations, CTIA member organizations, control the, you know, the network, so to speak.
So as I said, right, when we were designing it, we referenced almost every
existing
standard that is out there, but the intent of it was not to become the only de facto standard. Like if you look at on the financial side, you have PCI for ages, but PCI hasn't replaced your SOX or GLBA.
Yes, right.
So I think it's most standards out there being forced by different authorities raises the bar of security, and this is, I think, the step in the same direction.
Samir Dixit, Spirent, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us on Security Ledger Podcast.
Thank you, Paul. It was a pleasure being here.
It was a pleasure talking to you as well. Enjoy the rest of your RSA.
Thanks a lot. You too.
Samir Dixit is the Senior Director of Security Consulting at Spirent Communications. You've been listening to a Spotlight edition of the Security Ledger podcast sponsored by Spirent Communications. Spirent is the leading provider of verification, assessment, analytics, and device intelligence solutions. Spirent enables those who deliver networks, connected devices, and communication services to provide a superior user experience. From service provider networks and enterprise data centers to mobile communications and connected vehicles, Spirent works with leading innovators to help the world communicate and collaborate faster, better, and more securely. To learn more, point your web browser to spirent.com, that's S-P-I-R-E-N-T.com, or follow them on Twitter @Spirent.